All right. Well, what's up? What's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over Voiceover with Kip VH. I'm your host, Kip VH, and I am so excited to welcome to the show new friend, voice actor, the host of the Voiceover Pros Club on Clubhouse, the lovely, the talented Danny Burnside. Dude, thanks so much for joining me today and being on the show and for simulcasting this live on Clubhouse. This is very exciting.
Yeah, it's a fun experiment. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Kip. It's a blessing to be here. And, you know, your reputation precedes you. You're the man. So I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much again, my friend.
You bet. Thank you. Well, I had Rama Valori on the show recently, and he put us in touch. And so it's great to get to know you better. What's your story? Where are you from originally?
Well, first of all, I met Rama in prison, so I just want to give big thanks to him for helping me through this transition. Rama and I used to be repped by the same agency, so we spent a lot of time in the waiting rooms together. So yes. That's really how you get to know people very well.
Amen.
But Rama's a great guy, and I was thrilled to listen to your episode with him. You both are terrific voices, so it's just killer to hear you guys, and both terrific improv artists.
Oh, man. He's amazing. It was so great to be able to spend some time with that dude. But I gave him 3 hours, so we can let Rama go at this point. He's had plenty of opportunity to share his story.
Hilarious.
Where are you from originally? Are you from out here? Are you from back east? Where did you how'd you get started and all that stuff?
So I'm from San Diego originally, and I actually went to high school in San Luis Obispo, so the central coast of California, so kind of born and raised out here. Uh-huh. And I was involved in choirs way before I was ever a thespian. So really? I used to do mixed choirs and vocal jazz choirs. I guess you could say music was my first love, but I was a vocalist. I didn't play any instruments until I started playing piano when I was 16. I actually picked it up in order to play choral warm-ups.
Really?
Just kind of going up and down the scales. At that point, I was kind of like a student director for our choir. I was taking it super seriously. Like, I thought I was going to go into choral music.
Yeah.
Either try to be a professional choral vocalist or a professional choral director. So I figured, well, at that point, I was 16, which is about 11 years behind everyone else who has been taking private piano lessons since they were five.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I was just kind of blessed that I fell into an excellent choir program in San Luis Obispo. We only moved up there because my parents split up. I just fell into it. I mean, I was never encouraged to pursue music prior to that. I was not in the fortunate position to have private instruction as a vocalist or an instrumentalist.
Yeah.
And I just happened to fall into literally one of the top choir programs in the state. As a matter of fact, my senior year, we won number one in the state competition. So I just kind of got lucky, you know?
Amazing.
I was an athlete. That's one thing that was terrific about my childhood is I was always involved in sports. And even to this day, I really value having that athletic upbringing.
Yeah.
It's just kind of good mentally to have a foot out of the arts as well. Like I'm a performing artist, and I'm not currently an athlete, but I still love sports and listen to a lot of sports talk radio.
Yeah.
So you know, what happened was my high school switched from a semester system to a trimester system. So super random.
Yeah.
But it posed a really difficult situation for us where you can only choose one elective at that point. So prior to that, I was playing sports and I was in choir.
Okay.
And then once it switched to trimesters, it made it where you can only choose one, which is really a bummer for anyone who did multiple disciplines.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It was really, really bad for the student body.
Yeah.
There was like a protest that the students held, but they didn't care. I'm sure it was for budget right. reasons, I'm sure. Right.
Totally.
So I kind of had to make the tough decision, and I literally kind of put sports on the back burner. I mean, the truth is I was a decent athlete, but there's no way I was going to go up. I probably wouldn't even have played college sports. Right. I mean, that's just the reality of it. There's no way I was on the course to be a professional athlete as much as I loved it.
Sure.
And at that point I was doing very well in choir, and I'd started doing some plays as well.
Awesome.
So the first play I ever did was some Shakespeare. It's so random, but I fell into a Shakespeare club. The first two plays I ever did were Shakespeare comedies. It's like, wow, that's a start for you.
Exactly.
You know? Oh my God. I wish I could get the footage now. I'm sure it's the iambic pentameter. It's just painful, but yeah, it was a blast in, and we thought we were big shots.
Right. Totally.
So I was hitting choir super hard at that point. I kind of put sports on the back burner and just hit it nonstop. And like I mentioned, my senior year, we won the state competition. We were then invited to tour Europe. So at least Germany and Austria, because we had won that state competition. It was amazing.
Incredible. Really
cool. Yeah. So got to go to Salzburg, Austria, which is the birthplace of Mozart, and sing in a couple cathedrals in Munich and in Salzburg. Just an amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, I then decided that I was going to pursue musical theater, kind of combine my two loves, which was theater and music at that point. So I actually went to the University of Miami Hurricanes, the U, right? And started studying musical theater there in their conservatory. And then about a year in, I just was coming back for a Christmas vacation, right? And the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which is in Los Angeles, were holding auditions. Yeah. I don't even know why I decided to audition. I'm sure it had to do with financial reasons because I was on a scholarship at the U, but it wasn't a full scholarship. And it's a private school. It's pretty dang expensive.
Oh, wow.
And the education was great. But man, you start thinking about, wow, this times four, this is going to get crazy.
That's right. Absolutely.
So I just, I was doing a layover in LA before jumping on a little commuter to San Luis Obispo. And I decided to go audition for the Academy in Hollywood on the layover. And you know, Kiffa, sometimes you just rock an audition. Like we do that even now. Sometimes you're just in the pocket and sometimes you're not, even now and then. I walked out of that audition knowing I just destroyed it. And I was also fresh out of a year in a musical theater conservatory. So my skills were pretty sharp, perhaps relative to those just coming out of high school.
Certainly.
And I ended up getting a full ride. They wrote me a letter like 2 weeks later, because the semester started like the second week of January. This was like December 22nd or something.
Oh my God.
Like, hey, if you want to join for the spring semester, it's going to be a full ride, with the exception of, there's no student housing. So you'd have to pay for your own apartment in Hollywood. Other than that, your education is free.
Incredible.
I just said there was no decision. I mean, because I didn't have a lot of financial backing, it was like, all right, I guess I'm moving to LA.
Wow.
That was 2003. Uh-huh. And I've been here ever since.
Amazing. Oh, that's amazing, dude. That school was on my short list of where I wanted to go. And I honestly didn't have a choice of where I was going to go to college growing up, where I grew up and that kind of stuff. But American Academy of Dramatic Arts was like above UCLA, above like you, like all those things. Like I didn't know what I needed to know. And it was the one place that I saw ads for, and there was no internet when I was coming up. So it was just like, well, this sounds amazing. What did you get from that school? I haven't talked to too many people who've gone through it and learned a lot. Like what skills did it nurture in you and introduce you to?
Well, the one thing I'll preface is no matter what pedigree of school you go to in the performing arts, 10 years later, 90% of your classmates don't even live in the city anymore. They've all moved home.
Yes.
They're not even doing it anymore.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if you go to Juilliard. It doesn't matter what school you go to.
Yes.
10 years later, it'll be you and a handful of your classmates that are still on the grind, period. Right. And so they told us that then, and boy, is that the reality.
Yeah.
It's a tough gig, and it's not for the meek.
That's
and
right.
It's only, you know, I think on the very first day, they must have told us a number of times, if you could be doing anything else with your life and be happy, go do that.
Yeah.
Go do that. You know, don't even waste the time here.
Yeah.
And so if you can't internalize that and know that this is really, really what's in your heart to do, you may as well just go do something else that'll be more stable, more secure,
right,
and bring you more just stability in general.
Right.
But I knew I was all in. I mean, I knew that since I was 16, I knew I was all in. Yeah. It wasn't really a big question for me.
Yeah.
It's a pretty focused curriculum. There's not a lot of general ed, which I kind of appreciated, actually.
Yeah.
And it's funny enough, even at the University of Miami, we kind of had the reverse pyramid going on in the musical theater program. We weren't taking a lot of general ed our freshman year. Most of it was specialized classes.
Wow.
Which most freshmen do take general ed, right?
Yeah, totally. You don't get into it until your junior year.
I don't even know why they did that, but they did. Wow. And it kind of benefited me.
Yeah.
So I guess what I loved about the Academy, it really was a continuation of Miami, but it wasn't just acting. Like we were taking dance, we were taking dialects. You know, it's funny, Kiff, I never even considered being a voice artist, but we were taking vocal production, diaphragmatic breathing, Alexander technique, musical theater, all even dialects, all crafts, techniques that assist a voice actor.
Yeah.
But I never even thought about voice acting. I didn't think about voice acting until I was like 28.
Oh,
we're talking like years after graduation.
Right.
And it's just funny. I guess I was just going to be an actor at that point, or a musical theater actor at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I loved the most about the Academy is that everyone, all the instructors there were all in. They weren't there for a paycheck, because they're not getting rich instructing there.
Right.
You know, it's just, they're not tenured Yale professors.
Right.
They're
right.
Folks who have worked contracts in the performing arts, and they're all in now.
Yeah.
And not to put down any arts education, but I think an important question to ask yourself, whatever school you're going to, is when was the last time X instructor worked a professional contract, if ever?
100%.
If ever. 100%. I know that's a tough thing to say to somebody, because it's not like you can't learn anything from those individuals.
Sure.
But it's very different to like study acting from a textbook or like studying theater, right?
Right.
Rather than studying from someone who's worked a contract in 2021.
Yes. I completely agree with you. There's a level of I mean, all in is the right idea. Like you want people who are committed and hungry, and it also speaks to like, you know, like I'm not getting rich teaching this class. I do this because I love this work and because I need to share it. Like I was talking to my wife last night about the idea of teaching is not mind to mind, but heart to heart.
I love
and
that.
Like that concept of I'm sharing my passion with your passion. And if it connects and it ignites, then I've done my job. But if it doesn't, then, you know, this is like I got this in college and I'm grateful for the education that I got. But I definitely felt like when I entered the workspace that I had so much more I had to learn on the boots on the ground version. And it's not like people who go to Juilliard or go to, you know, a specialized school working with people who are doing it don't have their own learning curve as well. But there's a reality that they're aware of that leads you down this path in a different way.
And hugely. And if there's one piece of advice I wish I had, maybe they mentioned it to me. Obviously, it went in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
You know, when you graduate, you're not ready for anything. It's not like, oh, I got the degree. Here I am, guys. Right. You know,
right.
I wish I had immediately gotten into another class immediately.
Mm.
And I had just been going so ham since like 16 at that point that when I graduated from the academy, I just kind of needed a breather.
Yeah.
And not that I wasn't involved in the arts. I auditioned for plays and music, mainly plays and musicals is what I started to audition for.
Sure.
But I did not enroll into another class until probably 2 or 2.5 years after I graduated.
Uh-huh.
And you just kind of have that feeling like, okay, I graduated. But I really wish I had immediately gotten into another professional class at that point.
Yes. Yes. The difference between, I mean, my wife says all the time, you never stop learning. You should never stop learning. And if you're not, I mean, I'm taking a full load of classes right now at UCLA Extension. And, you know, it's so like, not only is it invigorating and I'm learning more, but it's keeping me sharp. It's keeping me active and it's keeping me hungry. And it's, you know what I mean? It's real easy when you get to a place like ourselves where it's like, oh, I'm a working professional actor in Los Angeles. I have been for years. And I can sit back and rest on my laurels or I can keep grinding. What's next? What's next? What's next? Keep staying hungry and staying excited about like different aspects of the work that you haven't done or things that you want to do again, people that you want to work with, projects that you want to develop, all that kind of stuff. It's like, it's just this, the image in my head is like a nesting doll. You know what I mean? Like this career can be like, you just keep peeling layers. I don't care for onions. My wife's allergic to them. So the nesting doll is a better metaphor, but basically, you know what I mean? It just keeps giving and giving and giving and giving. And the deeper you go, the closer to who you really are. You sort of tap into, you know,
and it's a constantly exciting career because you never know what's around the next corner,
man.
Just constant evolution and excitement, but you get what you put in.
That's
like the love you take is equal to the love you make, or scratch that, reverse it. Right.
Yes.
You follow me.
Totally. It's exactly right. So you knock around LA, you're a recent graduate of the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. You do some stuff. And what leads you into voice acting? When do you make that discovery? Did it, like, for me, it came to me with, I was with an agent that just handled everything. And then you would be like, oh, well, now we're going to do some VO and we're going to do some on camera and we're going to do whatever. There wasn't the specializing that there is in a market like Los Angeles, like New York, like Chicago. Was that how it came to you, or how did voice actory? I've just created a new, it's voice actory is that there's a category. How did it come to you?
I really kind of fell into it, but it was only through preparation, meeting, opportunity. So oh. I was just grinding it out on the audition circuit for live theater and live musical theater, both uh-huh. some musical theater stuff, some regional stuff, and was involved in that.
Yeah.
Which is so gratifying, but not for your pocketbook.
No.
3 months of unpaid or very low paid rehearsals,
yeah.
and then minimal pay for actual gigs. I mean, when I realized how little even brought, obviously if you're on the marquee, it's something else. But when I realized how little chorus members made, even on Broadway. I was like, are you kidding me?
Man.
I was like, really? I guess that's why everyone comes to LA. Right? I mean, it's a tough lesson to learn. But again, if you're on the marquee, if you're a name player, then it's a different story.
Right.
So I did a lot of theater in LA, small theaters, you know, booked some stuff at Stella Adler and some other theaters around town.
Awesome.
And then I had, was auditioning through, I was non-union at this time. I was auditioning through Actors Access for a spot, and it was for a mockumentary dating show. And I just was auditioning for one of like the quote unquote actors on the show. So you're playing the role of a contestant on the show.
Gotcha.
So it'll be presented as if you're a real person, but actually it's an actor. So sorry to break to everyone, but there is no such thing as reality TV, right? I mean, there is no such thing.
Nope.
It's all actors trying to advance their careers.
Exactly.
And, you know, directors telling them what drama to make up. So anyway, yes. I went to this audition. Again, this was non-union. It's probably like $100, if even that. Copy and credit, one of these gigs.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for one of these characters. And at the callback, I got lucky. I got a callback. And they said, you know what? Would you mind reading these sides for us? And they handed me the host sides for the host of the show. I was like, okay. And I booked it. I booked it as the host.
Amazing.
So I was like, oh, all right. I guess I should think about doing hosting a little bit. But it kind of just fits my personality in general. I guess I kind of always have been that host personality. And this was just an opportunity that presented itself that I, you know, I took advantage of. And I kind of rocked the audition, I guess. Amazing. I think being a host is kind of like being the president. They should give it to the person who doesn't want to do it, right? Like that's who should be the president, not the guy who wants to be the president.
Exactly.
Sometimes, you know, a great host is someone who's just good with people, not necessarily someone who envisions themselves as some amazing host.
Yes.
It's all about relating to your audience.
Exactly.
So I guess I wasn't trying too hard at that point. That's why I booked it. So I just decided at that point I was going to hit hosting a lot harder because I did have some success doing it. And I felt like the shoot went really well, kind of naturally for me.
Yeah.
So I started studying with Marky Costello. She's she does a lot of hosting classes in LA on the West Side. She's a big name. And also with Maureen Brown. So these are two like big names if you're interested in getting involved in hosting.
Awesome.
Studied with them for a while, did that pretty hard, and was having some decent success as a host. I toured with a motorcycle show as the host and live announcer for 3 seasons, kind of like a national tour around the United States, which was a blast, but living out of a suitcase.
It sucks.
But a per diem. That was the first time I ever had a per diem in my life. I was like, wow, this is the life right here.
That's right.
But we're talking 12-hour days sometimes. It was exhausting. Yes, I mean, that's when I really learned about vocal health. Because, you know, when you're done, you just want to go to the hotel bar and shoot it. But you just got to take it easy. You have a 7:30 call the next morning to do it all over again.
Right.
And because I was also the live announcer for the tour, I was in there before everyone else doing like the 30-minute call for the vendors and the stunt show.
Yeah.
And then opening the doors at 8 a.m. and then every half hour an announcement and in addition to doing a live stage.
Yeah.
It was just incredibly vocally exhausting. It's kind of like doing 8 shows a week on Broadway, like that vibe.
100%.
So I came back from 3 seasons of that and I was a little bit burnt out of just the touring life.
Yeah.
And so I decided to just audition for film and TV hosting in LA. And I booked a sizzle reel pilot. So a shoot that we were going to shoot the entire pilot for, but it's just going to be a weekend shoot again for another dating show. This is like hosting. So a lot of these opportunities are dating shows, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So I booked it and I was a co-host with a young lady who was fantastic. And we did the whole shoot. And then at the end of the weekend shoot, they approached me and said, hey, you know, we've got another, the producers approached me and said, we've got another project that we're working on and we think you have a great voice for it. Would you be interested in laying down the VO pro bono? So meaning I wouldn't be paid for it, but I'd get copy and credit for it.
Yeah.
And it's just this funny thing. Even at this point, Kiff, I was like maybe 28 or so.
Yeah.
And I had just never even thought about doing voiceover. And all of a sudden the gig was being handed to me. Like not even like, well, do you want to audition for this? Like, hey, do you want this gig? It's like, yes, I do. But again, this is after 15 years in the performing arts and never letting a year go by that I wasn't grinding. Never. Right. And I was always increasing some skill, stage acting, screen acting, hosting. I mean, whatever it was, I was always grinding on something.
Yes.
You know, I was doing sketch comedy in my early 20s and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So we recorded the VO and we just kind of knocked it out of the park. It's really funny. It was for a show called Bitches of South Beach about dogs, like bitches, dogs of millionaire owners in South Beach, Miami, that are getting pushed around in diamond studded strollers,
bitches
of South Beach. Just hilarious. you know, obviously I think my vocal print just kind of matched it. It's just, I don't know, something about it just worked.
Right, right.
So, I was really, really fortunate. And based on that, I thought I was just getting copy and credit, but I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to start looking into voiceover. I had also been told on a number of VO auditions, like after I do the read, they'd be like, oh, you must do VO. And, you know, that's kind of generic, like, oh, people tell me I should do VO. But I was getting that note from casting directors in the world of hosting. Like, oh, yeah. half the auditions I went on, they'd be like, oh, you must do VO. So I was like, all right, I guess I should, you know, I'm getting nudged this direction.
Right.
I was incredibly blessed after being blessed for the gig. I was blessed again that that those same producers shot me an email 2 weeks later. And they said, hey, one of the agencies that we were pitching this show to is interested in meeting with you. What? And so would you like us to set up an artist introduction? You just can't ask for a better setup.
Are you kidding?
But again, it's after grinding. I was like 28 or 29 at this point. I wasn't like 2 weeks out of school.
Right.
You know, I was just grinding.
Yeah.
You know, doing LA casting and LA and Actors Access and, you know, doing non-union work before I became union, just seriously grinding, doing all that.
Yeah.
So I met with the agency and they picked me up and they said, you know, we love you, but we also want you to take some classes at Cowmanson and Cowmanson because you've never done VO before.
Yeah.
Like the agent couldn't believe it. He's like, so tell me about your VO work other than Bitches of South Beach. I was like, well, hate to break it to you. I was like, should I just see myself out? And he said, look, we love you. We're going to bring you on. But why don't you go ahead and take some classes too? Because, you know, we want to submit you across the board and you probably have no idea what you're doing really. Mm. So I started studying at Cowmanson and Cowmanson.
Great.
There I met Lenan Zagger, who was my first VO mentor. Took Amazing. A couple classes there, took a promo class that she was teaching. She saw that I was just hungry as hell. And I truly mean that because I was, just like you and I can notice when a student has that hunger.
Totally.
It's very easy to identify
Completely.
Compared to someone who just wants to make a quick buck because someone told them they had a good voice or something.
Yeah.
You know? So Lenan invited me into a private workout group that she was the host of, or at least the moderator of. And I showed up the first day and it was me and a bunch of LA reps working voice actors.
Wow.
And I was so intimidated and so scared, but I did it every week for an entire year. It was the best thing I ever could have fallen into.
So great.
So huge thanks to Lenan. She's been a mentor of mine since. And she was just someone that was gracious and generous to me.
Amazing. Oh, that's so great. That, you know, and you've said it a couple times, and I really appreciate having that sentiment echoed. Like, you know, I've found that the amount of seasoning that you get as a performer doesn't begin with the first time you step in front of a microphone. It is that 10, 15 years of hard work grinding, whether that's a combination of in school or in your closet or in the car. You know, for me, it was literally driving from Cleveland to Detroit 6 hours a week, three times a week to audition for stuff and just running my mouth in the car, doing impressions of billboards to entertain myself because I loved playing with and seeing what this instrument could do. And there wasn't opportunities for voice matching, you know, not until I got to this market, but in that process of play, it's like, have you done this before? Yes, not for money, but I've been doing it since I was six, man. Like I've been, you know, it's like, you don't want a used sword if you're going into battle, right? Like, it's not battle tested yet, but it's strong metal, man. And it is that seasoning that you spend. And I think that's something that a lot of folks who are new to VO or have got a great instrument, but don't know how to use it quite yet. Do need to give themselves the gift of time, the gift of exploration, right? Like just screwing around and learning what you can do. I think that's a really valuable discovery.
And the secret is we'd still do it not for money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's too much fun. I love it. The fact that they're going to pay, like I do tons of like, you know, what is spec stuff for like trailers? Like I do a ton of stuff. That's just like, well, it's not paid now, but yeah. But if I'm the guy you use for Tom Hanks in two sessions, I will be paid and I'll be paid for another 25. So it's worth that stretch. You know, I mean, it is such a constantly shifting place and about, you know, you start to learn other aspects of the business of getting to know casting directors, getting to know the producers who, like, you might do an audition. You have no idea where that audition's going, but trusting that person who's receiving that audition is becoming a fan of the work that you're doing, you know, and that just because you can't see that sweat equity in front of you doesn't mean that you're not paying it. And, you know, I think that's something that, well, it's, you know, that were echoing in there. So you get a mentor and the workout. Tell me about the workout group. What was it that was so impactful to you? Why do you recommend folks get into one? You know, how do you find a good workout group of I'm in the same boat. Fortunately, I got invited by a friend into an improv VO group and made like 12 friends that we still stay connected to. Like, what was your experience with that?
Well, you just said it. Those friends, this was a decade ago, and those friends that I met in that group are still my tightest VO confidants. Yeah. Still 10 years later.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the huge benefit of a workout group is that you don't even realize it, but you're making those connections.
That's right.
And 10 years later, a handful of those folks are still on the grind. And those are folks you can lean on for referrals, not only to agencies, but also casting.
Yeah.
And that's really the foot in the door in this industry is a referral.
Yes.
And there you go. You've got it built in just because you've had your foot on the accelerator the entire time.
That's right.
Funny enough, it was a promo workout group.
Really?
I was a fresh VO talent. It's super random. Just because Lenin was gracious enough to invite me in.
Yeah.
I was a fresh VO talent, had just signed with my first VO agency, and all of a sudden I was in a promo group. But obviously I was the newbie in the group and they all knew that, but they saw my hunger.
Yes.
They saw my motivation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would do some commercial spots as well.
Yeah.
And just because mainly what I was reading for at the time was commercial.
Yeah.
But I also got a great grasp for promo.
Awesome.
I think what I gained the most out of that was just the professionalism of everyone else involved.
Hmm.
Just seeing how they handle themselves. You really learn from watching pros work, not just from watching anybody work, but from watching pros. Almost by osmosis, you pick things up.
So true.
How they approach the mic, the moment that they allow themselves before beginning. Some of us who are high energy individuals, we just get in front of the mic and just start going. We say, you know, you can take your time. This is your time.
Right.
Whether it's an audition, you could go to a live casting and you can take that moment before. Yeah. It's your time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's nice to actually demand that in a non-aggressive way, but I'm going to take this moment before I begin.
Yeah.
It's just an idea of professionalism. We were lucky enough that we would have a studio engineer with us wherever we were. I think it was Anarchy Post in Burbank.
Awesome.
And just watching the relationship between the talent and the engineer, observing that relationship and the give and take. Yeah. This was all new to me. So I was just absorbing, just like a sponge, just picking it up here and there,
yeah.
How folks read copy. A big thing that I learned was the ABCs. Like the first take comes really naturally to me. But now I was learning about how to give a B and a C read, which was a little more of a foreign concept to me. It's like, okay, gotcha. Here's how you modify it just by shades.
Yeah.
A little bit of a different shade.
Do you have a sequence that you use for your ABC or do you just kind of go with the flow or feel like I'm going to contrast what I just did or how do you approach an ABC read?
Only because I'm naturally a high energy individual with a pretty expressive vocal pattern.
Yeah.
I'll kind of go against that for my subsequent reads.
Yeah.
So I'll slow down a bit because I'm a quick talker, even if I'm not trying to be.
Yes.
Sometimes that's perfect for the copy. Sometimes it's not perfect for the copy. I just want to show them that I have the ability to take my time on a read.
Yes.
So oftentimes for my B read, I'll kind of just, if I'm in fourth gear right now, I'll take it down to second gear.
Yeah.
And I'll also bring it in even to a closer proximity.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's a nice conversational tone for the first one, I'll make it even more intimate for the second one.
Yeah.
So not necessarily romantic or quiet, but just intimate and in a slower pace, a slower delivery, more of a thought-provoking delivery, perhaps.
Yeah.
And then on the third one, if they're even still with you for the third one, they love you. I mean, even if they love you, they're not listening to the third one, right? I mean, maybe they will.
That's right.
On the cutting room floor, maybe they'll listen to the third one.
Right.
So then I will throw in a lot of improv because I do have an improv background.
Yeah, same.
So I'll really open it up for the third one and add some improv that serves the script.
Yes.
I think, you know, it's got the number one rule of improv is it has to, well, I guess maybe not the number one, but 1B, it has to serve the script. It can't just be, oh, look, I can improv.
Right.
It's just someone calling attention to themselves at that point.
Right.
If you can make your improv serve the script once again, and if you can tie it into actually the action that's happening, it's like, wow, this person gets it.
Yeah. 100%. And I'll add one joke, shorter, shorter, shorter. If you can make that joke, if you can make that joke that you're adding or that moment brief, short enough that they could fit it into a 30, like without having to like adjust for the tag where you're just like going off. Like, I mean, I've been in enough group reads where it's like, oh, they want improv. And then you improvise a whole nother 60 second spot of, you know, nonsense at the end of it with a couple hilarious stand-ups that still like, this is, no one's ever going to hear this or why would you, you know, but like, I love that notion of how short, how quick can you get a good laugh and out? And I think improv is critical for your audition, especially when you've got the room in a three. And I agree with you too. Like half the time I find myself doing two more now than three, just because it's like, I could contrast what I did, but it wouldn't be my A take if I wasn't proud of it. And if I'm going to show you range, here's my B, and a C now is just flexing. So I'm all flex. You know what I mean? I've been doing, I study ape movement with Terry Notary, which has been quadrupeding, which has been
fascinating.
Dude, it's extraordinary. And Terry's hands down the best acting teacher I've ever worked with. He's Cirque du Soleil. But he's also a former gymnast, and he's a motion capture performer. He was the dog in Call of the Wild. He played Baby Groot. He played Rocket in the Planet of the Apes films. But one of the things that he talked about energetically that really resonated with me was front body, mid body, back body. And doing a series of three in my front body is how I meet you, how we greet. I'm like my extrovert is the front half of my body. My back body is back here. I'm just moving from the back of it's where Harrison Ford lives. It's where Sam Elliott lives, but also it's where I live, and it's thoughtful and relaxed. And the mid body is comfortable and open and here and present, but not as laid back, but engaged. And that has become like my new rule of three. That's been really helpful to find that, to play with that shift, and it's physical and tactile. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's like what I like about voice matching is there's measurables to that. You either sound like John Travolta or you don't, you know what I mean? And so like there's something specific about that. It's not a moving sort of esoteric target you're trying to hit. Anyway.
I'm absolutely going to use that. That's brilliant.
Right? Isn't that cool?
Absolutely.
And you could straight up feel it, and it's, and because it's physical, I can dial in the studio. I can dial in. I can repeat it. You know, it's not like, oh, I gotta live off of what I sent the original audition in and trying to remember what I was doing, all that kind of stuff. Awesome. So tell me about like your journey into VO. So now you're repped and you're taking classes and you've got the worker groups. How did things start happening for you in VO in terms of booking and stuff like that? Like what waters do you swim in? You know, what do you learn on the job?
Literally my first day recording. So this was at the point in time when we would record auditions on site at the agency. Obviously that's all turned upside down nowadays. Sure. But at this point we were going into the booth of the agency and recording with a booth director.
Yes.
So I booked a very, very small commercial gig. They gave me three scripts that day and I booked one of them.
Amazing.
The agent was like, this hasn't happened in a really long time. And again, I was like, should I say myself out? He's like, no, you booked one. And then I didn't book one again for a very long time. I mean, that's a tough education right there.
That
it's like,
is,
oh, so it's
I'm
not like this.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, all right. Like I was ready to, you know, go put down a down payment in Bel Air at that point.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh, maybe Tijuana instead. So, I mean, I booked that one and it wasn't anything big, but it was just like a taste. It was like a little sample. I was like, oh, wow, cool.
Yeah.
And then it was a grind. And you hear the top players talking about 100-to-1 ratio of auditioning for 100 spots and maybe booking one.
Yeah.
And these are for some of the top players. And I definitely was not that at this point.
Yeah.
I had to learn the hard way, but I was down. But I had to learn the hard way that these bookings are few and far between,
yes,
no matter what.
Yes.
And so I started just grinding hard. But I then decided, all right, I'm going to start putting together my home studio. I started to just absorb more of the industry that was available to me, watching VoiceOver Body Shop and watching, you know, Chuck and Stacy's show and VO Buzz Weekly, and just kind of just starting to absorb everything I could. Rob Paulson's podcast, just kind of so that I could be doing dishes in the morning and thinking voiceover.
Yes.
I found myself in that p- position where I was kind of waiting around for agency auditions. It'd be 2 or 3 in the afternoon and I didn't get one yet. And I haven't done anything all day.
Yeah.
Just playing Call of Duty or Madden or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Totally.
And that's a blast. It's super fun to do that, but you don't get anywhere doing that.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you can be 16-0 in your Madden season and win the Super Bowl. And then actually when you turn off the PlayStation, you're like, all right. So I decided I needed to start getting started earlier than 2 or 3 in the afternoon, waiting around for an audition.
Yes.
And one simple way to do that was plugging into the VO podcasts that are out there, the YouTube shows. I started doing that. I started being more active, taking other classes because that initial workout group lasted about a year or so. And then it kind of fizzled out, as many of them do.
Yep.
And I did not instantly enroll into another one. So it took a while before my next booking after that first one. I don't know off the top of my head, but it was a little bit later. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And when I booked that next one, you better believe I had a different frame of mind. And I was so grateful for it. And I understood the amount of grind that it seriously takes in this industry. Yeah. You got to be totally committed to that ongoing.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I kept going hard. I always felt like I did well in commercial, and I kind of naturally have a promo voice anyway. That's why those producers gave me that promo gig in the first place.
Yeah.
So promo comes pretty naturally to me. So I was always reading for a ton of commercial and a ton of promo, and I was not reading for much animation.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a hurdle that I had to cross with the agency. Sometimes it's easy to get pigeonholed with an agency. You're a this guy or you're a this gal. You read for this or that.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to cross those hurdles sometimes. Like, hey, I want to be considered for some animation. Well, can we hear some animation that you've done? It's like, well, I haven't done any animation. That's why I want to start reading for animation.
Right.
It's a total catch 22, right?
Right.
So I started to plug into the animated world a little bit more and understanding what you could do vocally, like you were saying, you know, what you can do with your instrument. I'd always been a vocalist, but I'd never really been an impressionist. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of leaned on my money voice.
Yeah.
So I started to experiment a little more and then just showing them that I was dedicated to that education, enrolling in classes, shooting them an email like, hey, I'm studying with blank and blank on Friday. Looking forward to it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah.
It just shows them like, look, I'm putting it on my end.
Right.
And I hope that you can meet me somewhere halfway.
Right.
So yeah. And luckily then they started sending me out for video games and animation.
Awesome.
And I got another taste pretty quickly off the bat, not in animation, but in video games. I was like, okay, this is something I can do.
Yeah.
But still now the career aspiration for me, I think I just enjoy promo more than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy the paychecks of commercial. There's no doubt about that.
Without a doubt.
I mean, it's funny. Like it's the same thing that I mentioned about live theater. It's like when you realize what you make commercially relative to what you make doing a video game role, you're like, really? I thought those people were making bank doing video games. And some are. But the money's in commercial. I think my heart is more in promo than anything else.
Yeah. What is it about promo that resonates with you so much? And off of that, like your heart's in promo. Why, talk to me about that a little bit.
I think promo is kind of like hosting in a way.
Huh.
Promo is inviting folks to something. And it doesn't That's have so to be great. In a presentational manner.
Right.
But it's inviting your friends to something.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, I guess commercial can be that too. It's inviting them to partake in a product. The promo is a lot like that. It's like, dude, Kiff, you got to check this show out. Like that's like inviting a buddy of mine to see something that I'm genuinely interested in.
Yeah.
I think I've just always been a natural host. Even in school, I was always like the student representative and I had no aspirations of going into politics. Again, I didn't even want to do it. But I'd get voted in to do it.
Right.
Like, all right. I guess I am it in all its glory. Right. I guess I'm the student rep.
Right.
So there you go. I think promo just fits my personality more than anything else. And maybe that's a combination of, yes, I do love it, but B, maybe it comes easier to me. And that's why I love it.
Huh. Interesting. That's so true. Like that. And I've just recently started doing more promo to have that. I, you know, looking at my bingo card of VO work, and that was one of the things that was like a Yahtzee that was really tough to get your mitts on. And it is so satisfying and fun because it's that energy and there's something about doing promo that feels like old time voiceover. You have how many frames is this? We got to get this in 20 frames. You know, that like the precision of that and the energy of it. And also like the cutting edge of what's coming out that people don't know is coming, but you know, is really fun. And you're right. Like hosting is a blast, like getting to throw a party, for a bunch of people is so much fun. And I think is a, you know, as a couple of extroverts, there's something like really exciting about like, let's get up and get people fired up about a thing. It's really, really great.
But I would imagine, not even knowing you too well outside of your professional career, I would imagine that we are both introverted extroverts.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent. Absolutely.
When I'm home, I'm very quiet.
Mm.
You know, I'm not saying this is some kind of a persona that I'm putting on, but it's just one side of who I am.
Yes.
And when I'm home doing my thing, I'm really chill.
Yeah. I am too. I turn on without a doubt when I get in front of this little thing or in front of this little thing. Then, or when I go out into the world, like I'm like Norm at Cheers at our local Starbucks, but like, but in the house, I'm very we lately got an Oculus and like, I love disappearing into VR and like,
love it.
You know,
I had a PSVR and I gifted it to my nephews last Christmas. Sure if it's on Oculus, but you got to try Firewall Zero Hour if it is.
Oh,
it's incredible. It's absolutely the number one VR experience I've ever experienced.
Amazing.
Unreal.
Amazing. All right. I'll see if it's there. I don't think it is. I think it's still just on PSVR. And because I definitely want to get into a good first person shooter because that's the whole point, right? Like that's really what the VR really is just being able to play Call of Duty in VR is really exciting. Like I've loved Squadrons in VR, which is just flying out of a ship into Star Wars outer space was moving. It was something else. Anyway, that's somebody else's creation. Hell, how did you find yourself? Because you teach and coach. How did you make that transition or add that into your portfolio of offerings? What led you into that space?
I only decided to do it because my mentors were so dang generous to me. Huh. Really, like I remember thinking back on it, like why in the world are they inviting me to this stuff? Like I'm kind of a nobody. These guys have big agents and big bookings and big resumes. I don't even know why I was there. Uh-huh. They were so generous. And I look back on that and I just want to pay it forward a little bit.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, wow, that's just kind of what we do in this industry. We pay it forward.
Yeah.
And that's what the great ones do, at least. I was given that terrific example earlier in my career of how to pay it forward generously. So a good friend of mine and another voice actor, Rick Pardee, has an excellent quote. He says, "When the student is ready, the teacher will appear." I had never heard that before I heard Rick say it. He may have coined it. It's so money. It's like when the student is hungry, the teacher will appear.
Yeah.
And I think my mentors just saw that I was hungry. So when I see folks are hungry nowadays, but they don't really know where to go next, but they're hungry. And I want to step into that mentor role for them.
Yeah.
I can't offer them representation. I don't produce demos. I'm not going to produce your demo. I have no job to offer you.
Yeah.
That's the main point. I have no gig to offer you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not, there's not a, nothing you can gain other than mentorship and some, hey, these are some avenues to go.
Yeah.
I just think paying it forward is really important in this life. It's a very short life.
Yes.
It's not about money. It's not about credits.
Yeah.
It's only about the people. At the end of the day, it's only about the people.
Yeah.
And that's why I love to be a mentor as much as possible. Now, I'll roll it back even further. My choir teacher in those high school years was my number one scholastic mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of had a rough childhood and it was very chaotic.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I had somebody that I considered a mentor.
Yeah.
Not saying he stepped into any kind of father role, nothing like that. I'm just saying somebody that I could look up to personally and professionally.
Yeah.
That was an example of kind of how to be a man in a giving way.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. And it's so true. Like this, there is that, There's a call to invest in our contemporaries and the future that's beyond our presence in it, right? Like the part of teaching for me has always felt like I say, and I know it's to a certain extent it's not true, but I still feel it internally. I didn't pay for this experience of learning what I've learned in this job. These are things that came to me through a series of auditions and or bookings and or wins and or failures. And these are the things that have worked for me and there's nothing proprietary about it. And And I love this work. And if you love it, then let's nerd out about it in a way. It's like Ryan the Last Dragon, like the Dragon Nerds thing. It's like I feel that very much about this, about all aspects of what we do. And for if someone feels the same way about it, I want to high five them and be like, isn't this awesome? And, oh, have you tried this? And have you like the way, you know, like gymnasts will try to talk about how they do, like, I don't know why gymnasts, but, you know, or like craftspeople. It's because we're a guild. You know what I mean? We're like, we're a bunch of craftspeople who work with our instrument, and then finding best practices is really exciting to share. When you see someone get it, it's like, right. You know? And, you know, is that what led you to the VoiceOver Pros space as well in Clubhouse, or how did that aspect of what you do come about with like an emerging technology or what?
I'm so glad you mentioned the failures, primarily the failures.
Yes.
Like that's number one.
Yeah.
And they hurt. They sting. They stay with you, don't they?
They really
you
do.
Kind of forget about the bookings after a while, but the failures, oh, you don't forget about those.
No.
But that's really what molds you. Absolutely. If you can start eating those failures for breakfast and seeking out the next one, all right, then you have some, then you have a chance. Then you have some potential.
That's so great.
So when I discovered Clubhouse, I kind of was late to the party because I think it came out a year ago.
Okay.
I think I jumped on in January or so. I instantly knew it was gold. Instantly. It was one of these things, and only because I was, I'll rephrase it, gold for my specific skill set. Someone who is an audio professional,
yeah,
but also a host.
Yes.
It's really the marriage of my two loves.
Yeah.
We're talking about voiceover. We're talking about craft. We're talking about performing arts, but it's a hosting opportunity.
Yeah.
It's what I love to do.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it to try to make money. I'm doing it because I love doing it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing it to make money, you're going to burn out. You're going to have burnout no matter what you're doing.
Yes.
Clubhouse burnout, VO burnout, anything you get involved in, yes, you're going to face some degree of burnout.
Yeah.
I mean, you were talking about video games the other day. How often do you get a new game and all you can do is think of that game? You can't wait to get home to play it.
Right.
2 or 3 months later, it's on the shelf. You never even put it in for the rest of your life. There's exactly burnout in everything.
Yeah.
So if you're not in it for the passion, you will absolutely face that burnout.
Yes.
For me, when I realized what Clubhouse was, and I was, because it's invite only, which is a little, I don't know what that is, but that'll change.
Yeah.
But when I was gifted an invite and I kind of just started messing around, I was like, oh, this is it. This is what I'm going to be putting my time into for the foreseeable future.
Wow.
Because I miss hosting, Kiff.
Yeah.
I'm so blessed to be a full-time voice actor. I've got a great home studio that I work out of and I love it, but I miss hosting.
Yeah.
I don't miss living out of a suitcase.
Nope.
And I don't miss missing voiceover opportunities because I'm on the road living out of a suitcase.
Right.
I don't miss any of that, but I do miss hosting. And I always loved radio. I'm a really freakish individual. I'll get in the car and I'll put on talk radio. I'm a musician, I'm a singer and a pianist. I don't even listen to music. I listen to talk radio, period. I'm a freak, all right? That's who we are. You know, you don't have to be that way to be successful. I'm just saying that's who I am.
Right.
I listen to sports talk radio and I listen to, you know, just general, you know, AFI, 640, KFI, that kind of talk radio,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So even at home, I'll be doing the dishes and I'll have talk radio on. It's just, I love hosting and I love talk. Yeah. So for me, Clubhouse is just a marriage of those two things. And the relationships that it affords is unreal. I've connected with so many individuals across the world who are passionate and hungry and share similar interests. And it's absolutely motivating for me to see their motivation and dedication.
Amazing. Oh, that's so, dude, that's beautiful. Well, for those of us who are either haven't been gifted an invite, A, or B, on an Android platform exclusively. Tell me a little bit about what the experience of as a user, the VoiceOver Pros Club is and what that feels like and what kind of what the, just so, you know, I have a clear idea when I walk into the room.
Well, if you're interested in getting an invite, you can check out my eBay account. I'm kidding, obviously. But they are selling invites on eBay and Reddit, just so you know.
Yes.
Do not be scammed.
Yes.
You know, you should never have to pay for one, but they literally are going, which is hilarious.
Wow.
The VoiceOver Pros concept is in the description, literally the first paragraph is, it's where professional and aspiring voice actors come together. Mm-hmm. That's literally the first thing I wrote in the club description. It's not a hierarchy, of here we are, the professionals, and there you are, the minions, the commoners, everyone else. Right. Look at us, praise us, shower us with gifts. That's not what this is. There's enough of that already.
Yes, there is.
You know, you can't even shake hands with people because there's that separation. Like, oh, no, sorry. It's the haves and have nots.
Right.
I don't like that. That ain't my vibe. Agreed. I like everyone being in the same party together, regardless of who you are.
Yes.
I always mention on our shows, no self-promotion. I don't care who you are. If you self-promote, I already know who you are. Feel me? I already know who you are. And I don't like that.
Yes.
I don't like self-promotion. So it's where everybody comes together, yeah, whether you're a seasoned pro who's doing this full time or whether you just someone told you you have a good voice and you just are interested in what the craft is.
Yeah.
Well, right on. Here's a watering hole that we can all gather at. So generally we'll have two different types of shows. Either A, it'll be an open panel with a generally large group of panelists, anywhere from 3 to 15.
Wow.
Those folks are generally professionals.
Uh-huh.
We'll do a small interview with everyone on stage first, and then we'll open it up to audience Q&A.
Great.
So that's an opportunity for folks who are interested in getting involved, otherwise aspiring talent. They can ask questions directly to folks who are literally working in the industry. It's a way for them to put a name to a face,
yeah,
and to actually meet somebody. And the other style we'll do is one-on-one interviews. Well, essentially what we're doing here.
Okay.
I would bring you on the show, Kiff. I'd interview you for a couple moments, talk about your life and career. And then again, we'd open it up to audience Q&A. That's the really cool thing about the Clubhouse platform is that it's like a live radio show where you have folks calling in.
Yeah.
But you don't actually have to pick up the phone and call. You just raise your hand. In the app, it's like, quote unquote, raise your hand. So it's a very seamless transition of bringing folks up, getting the question in, and you can lower them back to the audience once they're done asking a question. It's literally a live radio show. Wow. And for a lover of talk radio, it's exactly what I've always wanted.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Oh, man. All right, you're right. I need to get a burner phone. I'll get something like knowing that you can use an old iPad Touch is great. I can make that happen. Fantastic. What are some of the things that, how has that experience and the experience of teaching and giving back, how has that changed you as a performer? And you know, more so as a person, like how have those opportunities both given to you, and what are some of the most profound or things that resonated, that still resonate with you, that you've learned through that experience?
You know, being a great voice actor has a lot to do with listening. Mm. Such an important, we think we got to get up there and talk.
Yeah.
And yes, essentially that's what we're doing. But it's like in music, the silence is what makes it, or the moments in between. Listening is really vital in voice acting.
Yeah.
And the more I coach, the more I listen, because I'm not actually the one doing the read.
Yeah.
I'm the one analyzing the read and commenting and critiquing the read.
Yeah.
I become a better voice actor each time I do a coaching session or a workout group that I'm leading. Obviously, the same goes to when I'm participating in a workout group.
Yeah.
But when I'm coaching, I become a better voice actor every single time because I'm listening.
Yeah.
I'm taking a different role. I'm observing what's being done and considering how it fits into the given script.
Yeah.
It's all about listening. I think the more and more I've coached, the more and more that has come to the forefront for me, how vital listening is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the best teachers you'll find, maybe they don't even need to say that much. It's not a monologue. It's coaching,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, some people hate line reads. I guess that's kind of the idea. It's like, you're not trying to tell someone how to do it. You're trying to lead them to self-discovery,
yes,
of how to do it.
Yeah. 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 Totally. Totally. I feel like that's my goal as a coach, is that you never need another coach. That you know, my goal for you as a coach is to recognize the, you know, I mean, improv, let you recognize patterns, and that you recognize the patterns in your own work, and that you recognize the pattern of the script, and that you recognize the pattern of when you are interesting or dynamic, or just observing those patterns and then learning how to replicate them. And the last series of things that I taught were based on nurturing your self-coach. And nurturing that voice inside that knows what the right thing is, but people will reach out because they feel they need to do something. And sometimes doing something is important to flip the script a little bit, but also I think you're 100% right in that, you know, what you really need to do as a performer, as who talks for a living, is to shut up and listen. You know what I mean? And listen to what the script is telling you. Listen to what, you know, what your intuition is telling you. I think that's really undervalued. I've never been one to mark up a script, and that's just not been my journey, or the thing that's really resonated with me. But I think there's certainly value for folks who have found ways through that. But
It's so funny. I used to mark up my scripts a lot, and I was taking some classes with Art Butler at Voice Tracks West.
Yeah.
I go in the booth one time and he asks, maybe it was for a copy of the script. I'm trying to think why I handed him the script that I had marked up. For some reason I did.
Yeah.
And he looks at it and I'm in the booth and he's like, Danny, don't do this. He's like, this is the difference between like college and the pros. He's like, I can hear you doing these markups. Essentially what he's saying is you're too tied to these markups. Mm. And there's a place for it when you're first starting out. Yes. I'm not saying marking up a script is a bad idea.
Yes.
I'm just piggybacking on what you said, Kiff, is at some point you just have to know what you sense it. You don't need to follow a markup.
That's
so right. From that point on, I stopped marking up my scripts as well and just kind of trusted my use the force at the Death Star. Right.
Yeah, totally. And sometimes your markup is going to lock you into a specific choice that for your B take might be completely limiting.
It's hard to go against the markup.
It really is. I mean, it's hard to go against what's on the written page when they've got copy underlined and highlighted and italicized, and it's like, you know, everyone's going to read to you that way. And if that's what you want, great. But like, direct me in the booth, not in the audition. Give me the chance to show you who I am as an artist rather than who I am as a trained SEAL. You know what I mean? I'm happy to give you alternates, but like, I don't know. That kind of attitude about this sort of combative attitude about copy has come with just time, and more importantly, come with confidence, right? Like the sense of I get what you're asking me to do, but let me show you what else could be done, or maybe the emotional life that I'm bringing to it is vastly different from what you're telling me needs to be bolded. Maybe it's not about time; it's about memory. You know. Anyway.
That time can't be understated. It's that whole 10,000 hours concept.
Yeah, right.
It takes a very, very long time to be able to just know this is the read. This is it. This is the one right here. Or this is the vibe.
Yeah.
I think I remember hearing a Don LaFontaine interview where he said, there's only one way to do the read that I just did. How I did it. That's the only way to do it. He was a master.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen overnight. That didn't happen when he had taken a class for 3 weeks and gotten a demo produced. And here he is saying that. This was just so after decades and decades and decades where he knew there's only one way to do that read, the way I just did it.
Yep, exactly. Oh, that's so fantastic. Well, dude, our time is coming to an end. Tell me how people can find you and find the VoiceOver Pros Clubhouse group can like study with you, etc.
Right on. And again, thank you so much for your time, Kiff. Oh, dude. You're an awesome host, and it's thank just been a blast to chat with you.
You too, man. This has been amazing.
So you can hit me up on my website, DannyBurnside.com. I also use the handle VoiceOverHost on Clubhouse. You can also go to VoiceOverHost.com. It's going to lead you to the same place, but DannyBurnside.com. If you're interested in coaching or workout groups, hit me up there. If you're on Clubhouse, either VoiceOver Pros, which is the official club, or the handle VoiceOverHost. You can also just search Danny Burnside. But hit me up. Not selling any products, but selling a lot of love and some guidance that can steer you down the right route.
Dude, that's so great. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. It's what I love about this work. Like the people that gravitate towards it have that same, it's a specific frequency of gravitational force that draws us to this work and to each other. And dude, it's a pleasure knowing you, and I'm really grateful for this time. And So thank you so much for sharing your journey and your advice and all that stuff. And I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks, bud. I look forward to continuing the friendship as well. Thanks, Kiff. You're right, man.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Danny. And thank you, all of you listening. This has been another episode of All Over VoiceOver. There'll be more coming soon. Peace. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at Kiff VH or on Instagram at Kiff VH or on Vero at Kiff VH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
Yeah.